clock in here. There's the clock.
Well, right.
Good afternoon, everybody. Shall I stand up here for a minute? Hello, hello, good afternoon. Order in the house, order in the house. I hope you're enjoying the food still. I've been enjoying the food, so please do continue to enjoy the food as I talk. Hopefully what I say will not bring on any indigestion. But obviously just stop eating if you feel that coming on. So thank you first off to everyone who's worked so hard to put together this wonderful meal. Yeah, it's an amazing spread. Thank you so much. And people are still working away in the kitchen there. It's just an amazing effort. Yeah, thank you. And also thank you for just making space for me. You've had a full morning already, a full message, and I'm only going to talk to you for maybe another couple of hours. Joke. You don't want to go home today, do you? So I just really appreciate that you're willing to stick around for a little bit longer. I hope you don't all fall asleep, actually, now that you've eaten. That's always a risk, isn't it? But hopefully I shall keep you all engaged for a little bit longer. Because for me, it's just a real honour to be invited. This is my first time here in the church, kind of physically, isn't it? So it's a special day for me to be here. As hopefully you all know, I'm a niece, aren't I? Niece, and a cousin and a niece. who I must call Auntie Angela and Uncle Eric, lovering there. And so, again, they're kind of double blessings for me to be able to be here and spend time catching up with family. Liz and Nick, of course, cousins, and Harrison, who I must mention just gets taller and taller every time I see him. It's amazing. So, what's the time? Yeah. So I'm just going to spend a bit of time this afternoon, talking about the work that I do with BMS. I know that you support the work of BMS and have done so for quite some time, and that you support me as, what do they call us now, link missionaries? I don't know, but you support me. I'm very grateful for that. So this is my chance to talk a little bit about the work that I do and hope to encourage you to continue supporting the work of BMS and supporting the work that I get to do as well. Of course, we've got some pictures to keep us all entertained, hopefully, and to make sense of what I'm talking to you. But of course, if there are any questions, it might be best to have, we can do like a Q&A at the end. But if you do have any burning questions, then please do just shout out or put your hand up if you want. Just shout out if you would, just put your hand up. And hopefully this can be interesting and a little bit informal as we go along. So let's crack on. Who am I? My name is Laura Lee Lovering, if you don't already know. And I'm a BMS mission worker with BMS in Peru. I've been in Peru since 2012, so that's about 11 years now. I'm meant to be using this. Get to the next slide. Lovely. So in case you're thinking, Peru, where is Peru? There's a handy map up here. Anyone been to Peru, actually? No. A shame. You should go and visit. It's lovely. So Peru is on the Peruvian coast, the Pacific coast of South America, just below Ecuador, just above Chile. It has borders with Bolivia, Brazil, Colombia. It's a beautiful country. And I'm based in a city called Piura, which is basically on the Pacific coast, up in the northwest, not far from the Ecuadorian border. There used to be an arrow, but the arrow has disappeared. There's a little blue dot. And give you an idea about where I am. Some of you might be aware that I've been with BMS a long time, that I've recently moved. I haven't always been in this particular part of Peru, and I'll be talking to you a little bit about that. But before, I was in the northeast, which is within the Peruvian Amazon, so quite different. So that's basically where I am. Again, I encourage you to come and visit. It's lovely this time of year. And we work there in partnership with the Peruvian Baptist Convention, and I work locally with the Piura Baptist Association, which I was leading in today. And actually, there's about 27 small churches that comprise that association based in the city and the wider region, which is also called Piura. So that's a bit of the geography and how that works. Okay, so I'm just going to try and talk this afternoon, about some of the challenges of the last couple of years. For those of you who are perhaps not so familiar with how BMS works, so I kind of live in chunks of 2 years. So I always refer to my last period of service. So we have 21 months in our country of ministry, Peru for me, and then around about 3 months back in the UK, coming around, visiting churches as I'm doing right now. So this last period of service for me has been really interesting, lots of interesting challenges, and I'm going to kind of talk about three of those key challenges as a way to kind of just explain a bit more about the work. But I wanted to draw attention to this little verse from Judges. We're not going to read the whole story of Judges, or Judges 6. It's the story of Gideon. Are you all familiar with the story of Gideon? Yes, excellent. So you'll know that Gideon wasn't exactly a natural hero. He wasn't the one saying, take me, take me. He was the one that the angel of the Lord had to find because he was hidden away in a wine press threshing the wheat. And he really kind of had to be kind of encouraged to be called and go forth with the Lord. And it just so happened that last year I had to come here for a short conference. And then I went back, and the day after I arrived, or the second day after I arrived, the ladies' group said, Laura, we volunteered you to preach. And I was like, oh, okay, so I'm preaching. What am I going to preach on? And I was still quite jet-lagged and tired, and I just didn't have a clue what I was probably going to be able to share. And I was looking in my devotional, my daily devotional of the day, and it was using this passage. I don't know if it was reading using this passage specifically, but it took me to the story of Gideon. As I was reading the story, we get to the bit where the angel of the Lord, it's quite early on, but you get the idea that he's kind of a little bit frustrated with Gideon, and he basically says to Gideon, just go in the strength that you have. That's how he starts it. Just go in the strength that you have. And I remember reading that and thinking, yeah, I needed to hear that, and I'll share on that as well. Because sometimes I think we all feel that even if you've been a Christian a long time, God can still ask us to do things, and we look at it and we go, I don't know if I'm the person to do that. I don't know if I'm up for that. I don't know if I've got what it takes to do that. God, are you sure you've got the right person? Maybe even we've accepted the challenge, happily, gleefully, we stepped into it, and we get a little way down the road and we think, ooh, maybe this is a bit more than I can handle. Maybe I wasn't the right person after all. Maybe I heard that wrong. And sometimes we just need the Lord to say, just go in the strength that you have, because that is actually enough for God. He did create the universe, after all. Whatever little bit that we can contribute is really by the by. The fact is, he's sending us. So this verse for me has been quite special over the last year, and actually the preceding year. It worked retroactively as well for some of the challenges of the last period of service. And the first challenge was this challenge of moving. So I moved house. I didn't just move house. I moved from one region of Peru to a different region of Peru. So we've got some pictures up there to get an idea of why Peru is such an interesting place to visit, because you can be in the same country, and in one day you can be in the Peruvian Amazon, which is warm and wet and green and full of insects. Whether you like that or not, I don't know. And in the same day, you can maybe you take two flights. You can be in the same country, just travel due west and end up in the other place, which is very hot, very dry, sandy, not very green at all. So for about 9.5 years, I was based in the green bit, and for the last 2 years, I've been in the not-so-green bit, and that's the area called Piura. And it's been quite a change, if I'm quite honest. I should stress, I don't live there. I didn't intend to kind of deceive anyone that I live in, in this little shack on the side there. I don't. I live in the city of Piura, but this is maybe some 10Ks out of town. You don't have to go very far to realise you're in a desert. And I'll be honest with you, before I knew I was going to Piura, but I knew I was finishing in the jungle, I said to the Lord, well, I've been in the jungle a long time now. It's very hot and sticky, very sweaty all of the time. It's really nice. Where are you going to send me? Could you send me somewhere cooler? And so he sent me to Piura, where it's hotter, and I never thought I would be living in a hotter place in the same country. Our summer temperatures this year got up to 38. which was a bit more than I was hoping for. But it just goes to show, I think, that God, actually, he's not so much bothered about giving us what we want, but he is most interested in demonstrating his glory through our obedience. And that's not always easy, but it always comes as blessing. So the next slide are some of the blessings of being in Fiore. For a start, like this part of the world, it has lovely beaches. It's the part of Peru where Peruvians go to find the nice beaches. So it's nice to have a place where with a cool breeze to go to. I don't live right on the coast. I'm about 50 kilometres from the beach. But still, the other good thing about this region is that we have roads. So if I want to get to the beach, I can actually get to the beach reasonably easily. In the jungle, we didn't really have a lot of roads. Funnily enough, wasn't a priority. So it was quite difficult to get around places. So it's really nice just to be in a part of the country where I can just get on a bus and pretty much get anywhere I'd like to go. So roads are good. And the food up in Piura is really nice. Have I written to you before about ceviche, or anyone has heard of ceviche? Do you have ceviche? Yay! Well, I dare say I think our ceviche is the best. that's what Peruvians say. So ceviche, for the rest of us who might not have ever had that before, it's raw fish, usually, marinated in lemon juice with usually chilies. This is how the Peruvians do it. You might do it in a different way. But we marinate it with chilies and usually kind of red pepper, red onion, and for about half an hour, and it's good to go. Really tasty. I do recommend it. It might sound a bit disgusting, but it is actually really nice. And this one up there, ceviche de conchas negras. Would you have any idea what type of ceviche that would be? You're not allowed to say anything. This is ceviche made with mussels. That's fish and mussels. I wouldn't actually recommend this one myself. I wasn't a big fan of this one, but you do need to try different things. So the food in this region is also really nice and very different to the food in the jungle. So these are some of the nice things. I would never have chosen, and this is the honest truth, I would never have chosen to come to Piura of all the places in Peru. That's the truth. But now that I'm there, I can see the blessing, and God has been really good. Because God is good, isn't he? He's faithful. Amen. So let's move on. Challenge number two. You might think, well, why did I move in the first place? Well, I moved because I changed role. So previously, I was working in what we call, with many, many words, the NAUTA Integral Mission Training Center, working with rural pastors. And then I was finishing up, basically I was handing over my role to a local guy, which is the best way to finish up any role in this kind of work, I think. Put me out of a job. And thinking, okay, what am I going to do next? And BMS said, hey, have you thought about being a creation stewardship coordinator, Laura? And perhaps if you're anything like me, your first question would be, what is a creation stewardship coordinator? And then your next question might be, why? Why does a mission organization need a creation stewardship coordinator? And these are very, very valid questions, because it's not your standard missionary role or mission job. I appreciate that, and I've always felt very honoured that the Lord has used me in my profession. I was a contaminated land specialist before I started working with BMS, so I'm an environmentalist by profession. So it's always been a real honour for me, I think a real privilege, that the Lord has chosen to open doors to use me in that profession, that capacity for his kingdom. But, you know, what is a creation stewardship coordinator? BMS had never had a creation stewardship coordinator. So when I asked the question, what's that? And they didn't really know either. But maybe I will answer the why. Why did a mission organization feel that it needed a creation stewardship coordinator? Because then that will answer the question of the what. So basically, long story short, I'll try and keep it short. 2019, the organization realized it had all these environmental policies in a file that no one really was taking any notice of. And we were increasingly aware that as an organization, you know, we work in around 35 different countries on four continents. The UK has the largest ecological footprint of any of the organizations that we work with. Maybe it was time we had a good look at, you know, this part of what we do and who we are. So they were getting all the papers out, and we did an organizational review of our sort of environmental sustainability, just what we thought about that, our theology, and where we think we want to go with it in the future. And over about a year of collaborating in different sort of, you know, meetings and working on documents, we finally came up with a policy document, as you do. And we even talked a lot about, well, what do we want to call it? You know, a lot of people are just talking about, is it just about climate change? Should we call it climate creation care? Should it be a creation care policy? I think that was actually the idea that was first kind of really suggested. And a couple of us were looking at it and saying, well, if this is really a biblical policy that is based in the Bible and not simply a reaction to what's happening in the world around us and getting in on the green agenda, this is about what the Bible says, and surely we need to really go and look and say, well, what does the Bible say about our responsibility to the world, to creation? Is it just about care, or is it bigger than that? And of course, we ask the question because we all believe it's a bit bigger than that. You know, turn to Genesis 1 and 2. You see that it's not just about caring for creation. God created human beings and he said, fill the world and take dominion, or have dominion over it, govern it. He put Adam and Eve in the garden and said, not just care for it, but till it, work it, cultivate it, and care for it. So we came to the conclusion that to have a creation care policy was not really kind of faithful to the biblical commission to human beings. We needed a word that encapsulated this responsibility to govern and to work it, to use it, but also to take care of it. So we thought stewardship was a better word. So basically, that's why we decided to call it a creation stewardship policy. Really long. And then it took them maybe about 2 years, and we had one guy who was basically implementing this policy in his spare time. He happened to be my line manager, my regional team leader. And it took him about 2 years to realize that you can't really implement a policy that affects the whole organization, everything we do. You can't really do that in your spare time. And at about that sort of time, I was looking for a new role, and because I'm an environmentalist by profession, my regional team leader said, hey, we'd like you to implement the policy, please. So that's the why, and that's kind of the what. So basically my role is to implement that policy across the organization. And so I'm no longer really just working in Peru. I'm working, in a way, wherever BMS is working. So it's just a little change of job. So it's a bit of a challenge. And as I say, we'd never had this role before. It was quite experimental, but we knew that there's no point having a policy that we've worked hard on and that has real desire to implement it. There's no point having a piece of paper if you're not going to do something about it. So I felt very privileged to be given the chance to actually put these words into action in our organization, BMS. So that's the what and the why. So it is a bit of an odd thing, I do grant you. It's not a typical missionary role, but I think it's very important. As I say, it's 100% biblical. I'm very proud of the fact that this is anchored 100% in what the Word of God says about our responsibility as human beings for the creation that God has made. So let's talk about some of the good things that have come out of taking on this bizarre role. Oh, sorry for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I could literally probably talk all day about some of all the good things that have come out of the role, but I know you would all be bored to tears. And so I'm just going to focus in on these two things. And one of them I'm really focusing on purpose, because it was a challenge and it remains a challenge for us, and I'd like it to be a challenge for perhaps yourselves as well. And it was this challenge of saying, okay, well, if we believe this is biblical, this is scriptural, we're talking to churches about it, we're talking to our partner organizations all around the world, what are we doing about it ourselves? As I mentioned before, we're a UK-based organization. We work all around the world, but the data is fairly clear. Who's got the biggest ecological footprint? It's not our partners in Uganda. It's not our partners in Bangladesh. It's us in the UK. So the onus really is on us to get our house in order and actually lead by our example. So for me, it's been really important from the start to actually focus in on what are we doing? What's our awareness of our own stewardship of God's creation with the resources that we have? So And that takes lots of different forms. The one I put up there, the circle, is actually our carbon footprint. So one of my responsibilities is to calculate the organisational carbon footprint. Now, I don't know how you feel about carbon footprints. They're not the be-all and end-all of environmentalism, but they're a useful metric. They're a useful way of just measuring where we're at with certain things. And you can see there's a big blob of blue on there. The largest kind of, it's over 50% of our footprint. Can you imagine what would be, what sort of activity that we do as an organization would cause that much of a footprint in our carbon emissions? Any ideas? That's the one, travel, flying. Yes. Funnily enough, in an international mission organization, we do a lot of flying, including myself, ironically. So, of course, the biggest part of our kind of ecological footprint, environmental footprint, is our flying. Now, we will continue to fly until the Lord tells us to stop sending or bringing people from around the world. That's part of what we're called to do. So I don't necessarily feel bad about that. But I should say, we have sat down, because we've got these numbers now and we can see where we're at. We've been able to sit down and actually have a real think about, okay, well, how many flights do we take? Where do we fly to? Is there any way we can rationalize the sorts of flights that we take? And one simple question was, okay, we have partners in France and Amsterdam. How do we normally get there? Well, we normally just get a cheap flight, right? That's the standard, that's the go-to option. Why don't we just change that go-to option to Eurostar? At least look and see. And it turns out that actually, we can use Eurostar just as well. Same cost, same time, if you do it with reasonable anticipation and at a fraction of the environmental footprint of flying. So as an organization, we've agreed it would be good to aim for zero domestic flights. It's just a little thing, but for us, it's one way that we're trying to show that we're serious about our own environmental footprint, our own stewardship of creation, the resources that the Lord has put into our hands. What else do we do? We talk about where we put our banking, where we put our money as an organization. We, as employees, we talk about where our pensions are invested. We have creation stewardship champions in the UK office. My hands and feet, because I'm obviously based a long way away from the office in the UK, doing little things about trying to get people to switch lights off. We've changed all the lights in the office, in the whole building. Baptist House is now all LEDs. So we're all trying to do these little things just to improve the way that we are ourselves stewarding creation, the resources that we have in our hands. And I would firmly recommend as a church that you would think about, if you're not already, think about EcoChurch. Has anyone heard of EcoChurch, the EcoChurch scheme? Has anyone heard of Arosha? Aha, okay, so you've heard of Arosha. I hope that's in a good way. You've heard of them. So they're a really good Christian conservation organization, and many years ago they started this thing called the EcoChurch Award Scheme, and it's a way for churches to start looking at what's your own environmental footprint. Are there ways that you can improve your sustainability? Everything from using reusable cutlery instead of plastic to changing the light bulbs to LEDs or planting a garden outside the church. I would really encourage you as a church, just as us at BMS, we're really trying to put our own house in order so that as we're talking to other people about this, we can say, well, actually, we're in the same process ourselves. But I would encourage you as a church, we need to practice what we preach as Christians and as churches. I really would encourage you to have a look at this award scheme and think about how that might be something to embed into the life of the church. Yeah. The other really exciting part of my role, there's not only two bits, but the only bit I've got time to talk about today, are the projects that we get to support, the environmental, what we call environmental projects, but they're actually projects that start with people. But as it happens, people are embedded in the environment, so it's actually quite difficult to separate the two. That's what I love about my job. So one of the things I've taken on with this role is what we call the Eco Challenge Fund. Have you heard about the Eco Challenge Fund at all in any of BMS's bits and pieces? Don't worry, I'm going to talk about it now. So this is their fund for, at this stage, it's for primarily supporting projects that have a demonstrable sort of carbon offsetting amount. And again, I don't know how you feel about carbon offsetting. That's a whole other kind of conversation we could have. But basically, it's a way for us. We know we're always going to have these flights and these kind of things that we have to do that perhaps don't have such great impacts on the environment. But on the other hand, we can also support good projects that we know are having a really positive impact when it comes to things like carbon emissions. And for me, it's been so amazing to be able to see certain projects come of age over the last 2 years, such as the picture on the bottom there. You can see that with the trees. That's a, I think that's a teak woodlot in northern Uganda, area called Gulu, where we have, well, we're supporting a local partner there who's working with rural smallholders, farmers, and helping them to have a sustainable source of timber and firewood through basically growing trees. Just so happens that that also sequesters carbon, and we can measure that. We work with an organisation called Climate Stewards that helps us kind of measure these things and put a figure on it, that's great. So this project, I've been saying that it's kind of come of age, but I should stress, any project involving tree planting doesn't come of age after about 15 to 20 years. So this one obviously hasn't come of age in that sense. It's come of age in terms of it being a pilot project over 2 years to try and get it established. And we're very happy with the way it's become established. Now we're hoping that this is going to be a long-term source of benefit for these farmers. But the other project, which has only just come online and I'm really excited about because it's one I was involved a lot in getting it approved and funded, with the project of putting solar panels in the GT Hospital in Chad. Anyone been to Chad? Me neither. I think I'd like to go to Chad. Have you heard of the hospitals in Chad? Yes. Yeah. Wonderful. So BMS supports two hospitals in Chad. And just recently, the hospital, which is in the southern part of the country, so they have a missionary who is their hospital administrator. And he sent me an email and he said, We have all these plans to increase the hospital. We have a short-term plan to build another 18 to 20 bed women's ward. There are lots of other plans to expand its facilities. But I'm thinking about how we're going to power this. So how do they get power? How do they power a hospital or any sort of large building in Chad? Usually they have to buy diesel from a tanker that apparently brings it in from Libya, and they feed it into a big generator, obviously. But Gareth is a very practical man. He's not an environmentalist, but he's a very practical man. Has seen that this seems a bit crazy. They're spending potentially hundreds of dollars a year, thousands of dollars, on diesel to run these things. But actually, Chad, although it is poor, in many things, it is rich in sunlight. It's in the desert. It has about 365 sunny days a year. So why can't we steward that resource and run a hospital? So, and this is not a new thing. They've actually been installing solar capacity in both hospitals for some time. But when Gareth contacted me, he said, well, look, we're going to expand the hospital. I don't want to just have to buy a bigger diesel generator. Can we put in more solar panels? And thankfully, BMS was able to channel funds. And I should say that, actually, thank you to you, because BMS doesn't have any of our own money, do we? We only have the money that churches like yourselves very generously give us, and we merely, by the grace of God, are able to channel that to important projects like this project in Chad. And I should tell you, it really made my heart sore. This project was implemented in sort of February, March, and Gareth, in his final report, he wrote, we got the solar panels installed, and then very shortly after, the cost of diesel in Chad doubled and tripled, depending on who you could get it from. And a lot of the other organisations were facing power outages and obviously fuel shortages. But Gareth was saying we were able to keep the lights on 24/7 because we'd just installed all the solar capacity. For me, that kind of just makes my heart sore, and I'm just so thankful to God. What we saw is maybe, you know, a really good environmental project is actually benefiting, you know, hundreds of people just by keeping the lights, the heating, the refrigeration, the surgery rooms going. Just because we're able to harness the power of the sun. That's really good creation stewardship. It's about loving people and providing what people need in very desperate circumstances. So I love this part of the job. And I just say, we wouldn't be able to support any of these projects or channel any funds for any of these projects without the support that Baptist churches like yourselves send to BMS. So I'm excited by this kind of work. I hope you are also just really excited by that, because this is your support in practice, literally helping thousands of people access healthcare and the lights staying on when the lights are going off for other people. So, yeah, I hope you're excited. I'm excited. So that's one of the really exciting parts of my role. So the third and final challenge I'm going to talk about is this really important question, which, funny enough, I'm asked quite a lot in Peru, more so than here, actually. And it's this question of, what does creation stewardship have to do with the church? And that might be a question that you yourself have. You might be there, sitting there going, well, this is all very interesting, but what does creation stewardship really have to do with the church? Maybe it's a question you've been asked before, I don't know. But I have certainly been asked that question quite a bit from the churches, particularly in Piura, where I'm now based. And it's always interesting to be asked that question and to think, well, what's the best way to answer it? And for me, I like that kind of challenge, because I know that the Bible has the answer. So all it means is just going back, just maybe refocusing, refocusing your thoughts a little bit and asking the Lord to just show me, okay, well, what's the right way to communicate this in this context? It was different in the jungle. All the pastors were also farmers and fishermen and lumberjacks, and they shot small animals to eat. And their connection to God's creation was obvious to them. They needed a different kind of message. But in Piura, where I am now, in the desert, in the city, it's a different kind of question from a different kind of point of view. But the answer is equally easy to find in the Bible. And I'm really grateful that you chose to ask for the message this morning to be on that passage from the Colossians. Did you do that because you knew what I had in my presentation? Well, interestingly enough, one of the key passages I use to teach on this subject. Is in Colossians. Because this passage in Colossians, so I literally use this passage from 1 Colossians, or Colossians 1, 15 to 20. And why has that been so important to me? Because I see in the churches where I'm working, I should say, they're really missional. They put me to shame, dare I say. They're so missional. They're very evangelistical. They're always out on the street every week doing one thing or another to present the gospel to people. They're always planting churches all around the region. You know, they do not need my help to plant churches or to preach, proclaim the gospel in any way, shape, or form. For them, you know, there is no doubt that Christ and pointing people to Christ is the center of what they believe as being a Christian and being a church is about. So for them, part of this question is, well, creation stewardship doesn't appear to have any obvious link to Christ, to Jesus. So what's it got to do with the church? That's perfectly reasonable, actually. Perfectly reasonable way of thinking. But the thing is, of course, the Bible does link creation to Christ in a number of places. I think it does it all the way through in one way or another. But passages like this are, for me, like just powerful, powerful passages of just once again just showing us that obviously there is a link. Obviously, creation stewardship can be linked to the church. Why? Because Jesus isn't just the saviour of the world, as we've heard today. He's also the creator of the world. And looking at a passage like this is really interesting, because it struck me as I've been studying it again and thinking about how I need to communicate well in this context. And it struck me, this passage, if you look at it again and ask the question, how many of the roles of Christ are related to creation in this passage? And how many of the roles of Christ are related to the church? Bizarrely enough, there are more that link into creation than to the church. Now, that simply is showing us not that the church is diminished in any way, but simply that creation is obviously linked to Christ, because he's the one that created it within the Godhead. So that we can't say that creation has got nothing to do with the church if we really believe that the church is about Jesus, because Jesus is the creator of creation. So this is the kind of thing that, well, not this is the kind of thing, this is the thing, and other passages like it, that I really felt the Lord bringing me to as I've been thinking about, well, how do I communicate, how do I answer this question in Piura, when I'm working with the pastors, when I'm working with church people, when I'm working with the young people. So we like to read this passage, and I ask them that question. And it's been really useful and really has helped people to make that connection, that actually creation stewardship isn't just some sort of modern, sort of green, secular fad that we're all going through, or even just a response to climate change, and if climate change wasn't happening, we wouldn't need to worry about it. But actually, that creation actually was there from the start, was the first thing that God did. He put it there and then put us on top of it. Essentially, he put us on top of it. We were the crowning glory of his creation. But it's all there for a reason, and he's still maintaining it to this day. So we don't really have a right to be indifferent to it if he's the one still maintaining it to this day. So anyway, so this is one of the ways I start to answer that question for people. How does creation stewardship relate to the church? And I found it's been really useful. I don't know if it's helpful for you as well, but it has been really useful for talking to the pastors. I hope I didn't get someone in the eye there. But now that we've got the kind of the theology we're a bit more happier with, we had to ask the question, okay, again, what does it look like in practice? How do we put this into action in Fiora? And the truth is, I wasn't really sure. I'd never done this job in Fiora before. So I was working it out alongside them as well, looking at the environment. And by the grace of God, I was basically given the freedom to start to work with a couple of small churches. We did this kind of simple course that I put together where we just read the Bible together, read passages like the passage in Colossians, understanding the fullness of who Christ is, understanding the fullness of what it means to be human and in the world, understanding just what, you know, the way that God can send us out and resources us on the way. And part of it was just about looking at our community. We literally mapped the communities. We drew a picture on a piece of paper. And we looked at, okay, where are the environmental goods or the good things in the community, and where are the environmental bads or the things that aren't so good about our community. And I just asked the churches, each one, to decide, have a look, and choose one thing that you as a church think you can do something about. Something simple. Something that isn't really going to take very many resources. You choose. You decide. And that's what they did, to my surprise and delight. And I was very clear to them that I haven't come here with a checkbook. It's about you guys seeing your community and thinking about what you can do. Something that's going to be a testimony in your community, because you're going to go outside. You're going to do this inside. You're going to go outside. But also something that's going to show that you're stewarding God's creation, the resources he's put in your hands, whatever they may be. That has this dual focus. And, you know, one of the churches, and this is a tiny, tiny church, has about 5 adults and 50 children, and it meets in this little shack, basically, in a really run-down part of town. And, it says auto power off. TV will turn off automatically, apparently. Please select OK to keep your TV turned on. Click OK, OK. OK, I shall carry on regardless. Anyway. Yeah, it's got 260 seconds. It's also a reminder that I should stop talking. Hey! I wish. Oh. Maybe this is the timing for me to stop talking, because I've got 240 seconds. Oh. Watch some BBC Two now. This is a comic break. Comic break, yeah. So basically, I think this is a sign, you know, you're all tired, you want to go home. Yeah. I know. You have done well. I do take the hint. Yeah, no. I'm winding it up. I promise. I'm winding it up. Okay. I'll try and talk and distract you even whilst the screen is doing things. So basically, yeah, the one just...
You've got another 4 hours, 10 minutes.
Yes! Yeah. Can we go back a slide? Yeah. Yay. Okay. So the one church, this tiny little church with the 5 adults and the 50 children in this rundown part of town, they did the most obvious thing, perhaps. They said, well, we can do a litter clean. And they have this tiny little building, which is not even really a building, but it's on a lane, basically, and it's full of rubbish, because in Fiora, they don't really manage their rubbish. They just don't really manage it. They're like that. So they just decided we'll do a clean-up. But as we're doing the clean-up, when all the neighbours start rubbernecking and going, what are they doing? We'll give them pamphlets about Jesus and use it as a way of talking about the church and talking about Christ. I thought, well, that's a genius idea. Please do that. So obviously, you know, I helped them organise because they'd never done anything like this before. And I, you know, helped them organise it. We managed to get some of the young people from one of the other churches to come along and help them. And they had these green T-shirts. And it was just really, really simple. Such a really simple thing. And my prayer is really, but I still support this church. I go there fairly regularly and do Bible studies. But I'm hoping that I can persuade them this could be something they do on a regular basis and just kind of integrate it into the life of the church. But again, I was just so excited that this was their own idea. They had the initiative themselves, and it's very simple. The other church had a slightly larger idea. Again, this is completely their own idea. It was nothing to do with me. I think I probably tried to talk them out of it at one stage. But they decided a good thing to do would be to create a children's play area. They happened to have land in front of their church and a well so that they could water plants. And in their village, they have no green space whatsoever. There's no place for where children have things like slides or swings, rather, swings. And they decided, well, why can't we do that? We've got the land, we've got the water. And so I merely helped them write some letters to get some support from the local authority. And then they did everything else themselves. And it was a journey of faith for them, and it was a journey of faith for me as well. And now they have this children's play area, which is literally right in front of the front door of the church. So the next thing we're working on is, well, can we get some signage? Can you actually use it to do some events there and not just have it in front of the church, but really actively point people to the church? But the beautiful thing is that, I mean, I must say, these weren't my ideas. They were the ideas that the churches came up with. They pretty much did them themselves with their own resources. And they answered that question for me. What does Christian stewardship look like here in this context of these churches? And now that I can see what that looks like, I'm sharing these with other churches. And I'll be honest, we're at the start of something. I don't know where it's going to go. As I say, when I first arrived, no one had even thought Christian stewardship was a thing. And now at least we're starting to talk about it. And it's a process. And it's a little bit frustrating. We start other things and they don't go on. Or we book other things to happen and then they get cancelled at the last minute. You know, that's life. But the exciting thing for me is that we're already talking about it. And that people can see that this can be a genuine part of the church. And it should be a part of the church. It doesn't take the place of anything else. Christ is still at the centre. But this is another way which we show that we love Jesus. And that we want to point other people to him. So, yeah, that's been a really exciting thing for me. And I hope going back that I'll be able to be working with more churches and just encouraging them to think about what they could be doing in their own community. So finally, I really am finishing off now. There we go. Just finishing off with some prayer points. And just bringing us briefly back to that verse in Judges. Yeah, go in the strength that you have. The angel of the Lord is saying at the beginning, just go in the strength that you have, right? But you have to finish the whole sentence, because the sentence ends with the angel of the Lord saying, am I not sending you? And that's the whole point, isn't it? We can go with the little that we have, because it's God sending us, because he's the ultimate, basically, resourcer, project manager of the universe. So if he's happy to send us, knowing full well what little or what lot we have, we can go with confidence. And he's sending us. And I've seen God's faithfulness in the last 2 years. I didn't feel like I had a lot necessary, but I knew that what I was doing. But God has known the whole time. What was beyond my horizon was not beyond God's horizon. And it's the same for all of us. New times, new lands, new plans, they're only new for us. God actually has gone ahead of us in everything. So it's worth going, isn't it? It's going with whatever we have when it's him sending us. So please, I just want to finish with some general areas of prayer. I know you already support me with prayer. I'm so grateful for that. I can't tell you how precious it is to know that churches are praying for me when I'm a long, long, long way away. And I only get to come and visit maybe once every 2, 4, 6 years. Some churches I never get to visit at all. So I really want to thank you for your prayers. And so please don't stop. And these are the four areas. There's two here. First one, just prayer for me on a personal level. As I'm still building friendships in this new city and a new job, obviously I love my job, but it's also good to have something apart from my job to do. So prayer for my own well-being and just building good relationships there. I also ask you to pray for the Peruvian Baptist Convention, you know, that kind of Peru-wide family of Baptist churches. Please pray for them as they're trying to do good work across that country and galvanize the work of the Baptist churches there. And I'm in there, you know, talking about Christian stewardship, and I do ask that you'd help me to, or the prayer would be for me to know how to communicate well in the right place to the right people and for the right and best reasons. And then, next one. And then also just pray for BMS as an organisation. I don't know for how many years you've been supporting BMS, but of course we always need prayer. I mean, not just for creation stewardship, but in all things, that we'd be good stewards of all the resources we have, the human resources as well as the financial resources as well as the infrastructure resources, that we would be good witnesses of God's goodness in everything that we do. And we do need to be better. We do need to change. We recognize that. We want to be better. But we do need prayer and wisdom to do that. And finally, please just pray for Peru. It's a beautiful country. I do hope that maybe one day you'll get to visit a part of it. But right now, in the region that I'm from, as I left in May, we were just coming out of the wet season. We've had a really bad wet season. There's been a lot of flooding and landslides, there's some loss of life and a lot of loss of property. Although in the desert, you know,
so much for really communicating with you. Thank you. Involvement in his work really ridiculous, and that's great. In fact, Jenny's